They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights. On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Radio Fairfax, I'm Sue Bartholomew, and joining us today, we have a very unusual man. Roger Wood is an attorney in Phoenix, Arizona, and he started off life as an HOA attorney, but now his website says, put the H back in HOA. Roger, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Sue. Thanks for having me.
Putting the H back in HOA, what made you decide to flip over and go from representing HOAs that you had done for a number of years to representing homeowners?
That's a great question. I'd spent probably about 11 or so years on the HOA side of things. Was in a partnership here in Phoenix with some really good lawyers and was doing my work for HOAs and boards and working with management. And as I got through several years of that, I was coming up empty on how it made me feel when I went home at night. I was getting frustrated with some of the issues going on in the industry. I was getting frustrated with not feeling like what I was doing was really helping anyone, which is one of the motivations I had for being a lawyer in the first place. And so a couple of years ago, would have been the summer of 2011, I took a leave of absence. My partners at the time graciously said, yeah, take whatever time you need. And during that kind of time of soul searching and looking at what I thought would be best for my future legal practice, I thought, you know, I think I'd rather be helping homeowners on the other side of this. I know the law. I know the issues. I know the personnel. I know all the different relationships that go on. And what better opportunity to help homeowners than to take off the black hat and put on the white hat, so to speak, and be able to help people. So that's what I've done. November 1st, 2011, I kicked off representing homeowners and thought this is going to be an experiment in whether or not people are really that troubled by what's going on in their HOA. And quite frankly, Sue, I had absolutely no idea. I had absolutely no idea how pained and troubled homeowners in my state, at least, are in dealing with associations and boards and management. And I have a constant stream of phone calls, people seeking information, and many of them ultimately representation on their HOA, condo, or co-op legal issue.
You are quite unique. I don't think I've run across anyone who has said, I'm going to give up all of this money representing 1,200 HOAs, and go over on the other side and work with the homeowners. My hat's off to you, Roger. I think you're very unique. I know a lot of attorneys have said, well, you know, HOAs are a little bit out of control, and we will help the homeowners as well, which sometimes I think is a conflict of interest.
I've heard that from other lawyers as well. There's a few lawyers out there that will, in their HOA practice, will continue to represent homeowners, but I always feel like that they do that, they pick and choose, right? Oh, we'll take the good case or the really egregious issue. Or sometimes I think they take it hoping that the homeowner they represent will become the board member of tomorrow and hire them on the more lucrative association side of things. And I actually tell my clients, I help clients, for instance, with board recall issues, which is always an interesting process to get homeowners from A to Z through a recall process. But I tell them up front, the moment that you become a board member and you get appointed to this new board or elected to this new board, I don't want to be your lawyer anymore. I'm going to stand on the side of the homeowner as best I can. You all go and hire some other HOA lawyer to help you once you get into that position. I'll help you get there, but I don't want any part of being the HOA's attorney.
Wow, you really are unique.
I do make a couple of exceptions in my practice. I will help a homeowners association sue a management company. That's on my list occasionally because the HOA lawyers, as you well know, have such unusual relationships with management, if that's an open term to you, that oftentimes they won't do that. They won't help their own client when there's been a problem under the terms of the management contract. And so I do help associations, and when I say a couple, one or two, here and there that happens. But the bulk of what I do is all helping owners up until a point, and when they become board members, I don't really want to help them anymore.
Let's talk about this whole concept, housing concept. Is it a viable form of housing? I mean, I've been asking that question for years, and I keep coming up with no. And I'm going to separate out HOAs from condos and co-ops because they're all very different. But with an HOA, I mean, just because there's a pool there doesn't mean you have to give up your entire life. Let Pools R Us deal with the pool, and if you want to join, pay them a membership fee and be done with it.
Yeah, as a form of, you know, ownership and a way to purchase your property in an HOA, a planned community is what we call them in Arizona, setting aside the condo and the co-op for a minute, I don't really understand the necessity of it in a lot of cases. There may be some really unique things with a very large association where it might make some sense to pool some resources. But in some ways, I've met a couple of homeowners that the only thing their association does is maintain a very small monument sign, buy insurance, and send out fine and penalty notices to homeowners when the board decides they're in violation. And that's pretty much the only purpose the association serves. And many times they're reading so deep into the deed restrictions that I wouldn't even necessarily say what they were doing was sending out violation notices. They're just sending out little missiles of harassment and frustration to all the homeowners just because they have a position on the board. That's when the kind of, you know, the tail is wagging the dog, I think, in those situations. The only people that benefit there, obviously, are the professional management companies and the lawyers, some landscape companies, and it just becomes a way for the homeowner's money to get funneled through one big pot in order to get split up into all these other pieces. Sometimes I think homeowners would do a lot better keeping their money in their own pocket and making wise decisions about how to properly landscape or how to do all the other functions that we've given up to this nonprofit corporation. So I tend to agree with you. Is it viable? I don't know if it is in the long term. I don't know if it's something that people are going to want, and it's going to be something that people are going to see as a benefit. Everybody will tell you, well, I don't want a big purple house next door to me. But at the same time, I don't know if they're understanding what they're giving up in assuring themselves that there won't be a purple house next door.
They can't even assure that, because sometimes people have painted their houses purple and there's no stopping them. I mean, there's nothing to prevent them from doing that other than somebody else deciding they don't like the color. In my governing documents, there's nothing about color. So there's nothing to stop me from painting my house purple, if that's what I want. Most people aren't going to do it, but unless they want to really tick you off. But
and there's a few out there that have that motivation, I think, sometimes.
Somebody did, not in an HOA, in Alexandria, which is really old, and they have these old townhouses that are not part of HOAs, and somebody decided they were just for a lark. They painted a big orange sign in the middle of their house, and they just watched to see what the neighbors would do about it. I think eventually they painted it out, but, you know, it was just for fun, just to see what would happen. You have on your website, you have a Friday phone call. You're open on Fridays. Tell me about that.
Well, I'm just trying to get to a situation where homeowners have a chance to talk to a lawyer without creating an attorney-client relationship so that there can just be an open dialogue about HOA legal issues, about problems. Obviously, as a lawyer, I have to be careful when I open up that dialogue not to let folks think that, you know, I'm their lawyer because they made a phone call on a Friday at lunchtime. But setting that aside, I think the HOA lawyers spend lots and lots of money educating board members and management companies about the law and about how to and about problems or issues. And I think sometimes we really don't have the same place for a homeowner to go to get good information. So I'm trying to do my best to make my website as robust as possible. I'm trying to do my best to do certain things to put information in the hands of homeowners. I think that's really scary for boards and their lawyers and management. I think they like homeowners being ignorant. I'm just trying to do something small, and I may have 4 people on the phone call, I may have 30 people on the phone call. I don't really care, quite frankly, if I spend a good hour have a good chat with folks about things they're experiencing and trends in their community, and it just gives them an opportunity to feel it's a safe, free place for them to ask some important questions. I also find I do that all the time, every day, when I pick up the telephone. I mean, there's a large number of people that call me that don't hire me. It's just the reality. There's a lot of myths out there about HOA law. There's a lot of misunderstanding. And a lot of homeowners have very simple questions. Sometimes I answer them in a couple of minutes, and hopefully I never have to talk to that homeowner again. Hopefully I've given them enough to empower them to go do what they need to do. There's plenty of people who do have enough problems for me to represent them and help them through those issues, but there's just so much misinformation and misunderstanding that I want to be able to just give a little portion of my time back to helping people know that they have a free place to go for information.
I think that's kind of why I started the show, was to provide homeowners with information that's not otherwise readily available to them, and tell them, hey, you know, don't buy into all the lies. They're basically, they're fear-mongering. I mean, that's not going to protect your property values. Just because your neighbor has 6 rose bushes, that's not going to do anything.
Not a thing. I've talked to a lot of real estate professionals lately. I've done some speaking just to, kind of be the talking head on some panels for some real estate meetings. And at that level, you know, the people that are buying and selling and representing owners, they see the HOA issue as a real hindrance sometimes to buying and selling. Not just the existence of the HOA, but you know, these HOAs get a reputation in town. Oh, wow, you don't want to buy property in that HOA or in that condominium because of this reputation it might have at the board level. And I think that's certainly not a help to the property value. It hurts the property values. It forces agents to tell their clients, look, you don't want to look there. Maybe an interesting unit. It may have really nice features inside, but you don't want to be a part of that HOA. Let's move on.
But you know what? They're not allowed to do that, because then they're violating the fair housing laws. They have to show everything that's on the market. I sold real estate. I used to tell my clients, please, please, please ask me to look in non-HOA neighborhoods. And I'd tell them why I didn't like HOAs. And they'd say, yeah, but they protect property values. And yeah, I know. You know, and I thought, well, just don't call me if you get into trouble. I did my bit. Roger, let's give out your website.
Okay.
Go ahead. What's your web address?
No, go ahead. Oh, my web app. I'm sorry. My website is, it's the letter J, rogerwoodlaw.com. And it's all one word, all lowercase. jrogerwoodlaw.com.
Please check it out, folks. Some good information. There's a blog there. I haven't read everything, but I plan on going back and reading it. One thing I did see, and we've touched a little bit on it, Roger, but you said you were committed to education. And I think what you just talked about is where your commitment comes in, is actually providing free information to anyone who wants to call in on a Friday, right?
Yeah, that's part of it. I mean, that's certainly part of it. I also am committed to when people call up. I had a title company group call the other day and some real estate agencies call and say, hey, can you be part of our panel? Because there's plenty of HOA lawyers that are out there, let's call it on the circuit, right? They're educating people at lunches that they provide, or they're using, you know, their local CAI chapter as an educational vehicle. But I found that there's very little, if anything, for the owner and from the owner's perspective. And if I'm able to come out and talk to a group of folks at a small real estate office where their agents get together for a lunch and learn, that's some powerful opportunities for our homeowners, even though I'm maybe not interacting with them directly. Getting the good information into the hands of the people that interact with them most regularly about property and about real property and HOAs is part of what I'm committed to. And then the Friday phone calls are those kinds of things as well. And eventually, I would love to have opportunities where the firm could put on a seminar that's purely for homeowners to come to, for homeowners to come learn about their rights, for homeowners to come and have discussions with other homeowners. I think that's the other problem in this industry is the homeowner. I have a post on my blog site from several years ago when I first started a couple of years ago, and I essentially say, look, the word deadbeat and the word homeowner aren't synonyms.
Yeah.
There's so much anti-homeowner sentiment in the industry that I think homeowners feel abused, they feel alone, they feel singled out, they feel like no one understands their problem. And I think it would be powerful not just to educate them at a seminar or a Friday phone call, but I think it's powerful when you get homeowners that live in different communities to talk to each other and say, wow, we had this problem in our community, or we did that last year and it was helpful, or I've been through this and I can share my experience with you. That's starting to happen, I've noticed, on a national level. I mean, we've got pockets of, website like yours. We've got other website where, folks have written books about their own experiences, trying to get information to people about, yes, you can fight your HOA and survive it, and here's some things to help. So I think that's my other idea about education, is that I just think the more information homeowners have, the more empowering it is for them to walk into that board meeting, knowing that they can record the meeting, knowing that they have a chance to speak, knowing that they can question the board about its decision making. I think those are powerful things. I'm looking forward to where the firm will be able to help homeowners on that front for years to come, because I don't think education, you just get a whole new crop of homeowners that don't know anything when they start buying property. So we're going to be in this process. So long as there's an HOA put in place, we're going to be educating homeowners on these issues.
You were a member of CAI, and you did some training there, right?
Yeah, I actually was pretty involved at CAI, both at the local and annually at the law conference. Taught lots of classes and was involved in that organization, yes.
Now you're no longer involved with, well, I don't know if you're still a member of CAI or not, and that's not,
I'm not, actually.
You're not?
Yeah.
And I wonder, do the people that you worked with, and obviously you made friends with and know quite well, do they treat you any differently? Have they tried to pull you back to their side?
I haven't had anybody try to pull me back, so to speak. I actually have, lawyers are funny this way, right? Our clients may be in a bitter dispute, but sometimes lawyers can, continue to be friends and at least good colleagues, because we may have another case together one day, and so the scorched earth policy isn't always a great policy between attorneys. And so I do have good relationships with the lawyers on the other side that I used to be competitors with or even in the firm with, because the reality is, on this side of things, I'm filing lawsuits, I'm defending lawsuits, I'm getting fully involved in the cases they have on the other side of things. So I've got to work with them. I've got to figure out a way to continue to have good relationships, and I think I do. I think I've worked hard to do that. It doesn't mean I have to agree with some of their positions. It doesn't mean I have to like the way that the industry is set up right now. And I don't think I've been pushed out or otherwise ignored. I think CAI as an organization has room in the umbrella of CAI to have an owner perspective. And in fact, if you go read their mission statement on the website, there's a lot of great language that when I read it seems like it would be owner friendly. But of course, your experience in the industry and what I know about the organization, I think they've lost sight of that somewhere along the way. I don't know if that's happened, you know, slowly or it all happened and it was so, you know, all happened at once. I think it's evolved over time. And so I just don't think there's a place for the homeowner to have any voice in that organization unless that homeowner happens to be a board member. And I think that's where my goals as a lawyer in my practice in helping homeowners kind of ran askew of the CAI vision. And so it isn't so much that I'm not welcome there. It's more that I don't think they know what to do with me because I can make some good points about how they should be involved with homeowners, but no one is. And the positions they take on legislation and the things that they do, the homeowners don't have a voice in that organization. And so, you know, it does what it does, and it probably does it well. It's large. It's you know, it's got all sorts of local chapters around the country doing the work, but I just don't feel that there's any room in that umbrella for the owner perspective. And that's kind of sad to me. And if that makes me the outsider, then I guess that's what it makes me. And they'll just have to contend with that. I do plan to, you know, attend certain events occasionally, not because I'm trying to support them, but because I want to know what's going on. For instance, if I have a chance to, in January to go to the National Law Seminar, I will, because I want to know from my client's perspective what the trends are in HOA law around the country, what the HOA lawyers are thinking on their side of those issues. I think it's really helpful for me to have that perspective. So I'm working on going there this year. I didn't go last year for some scheduling reasons, but I'm working on going this year just because I think it's important that I stay educated on what's going on. No one else is going to do that for homeowners, at least in my state. I don't see that happening very often. There's just too few other lawyers doing what I'm doing. So I think the organization has its place, and I think I'm glad to, like I said, I'm glad to be on the outside of that for right now.
Well, I'm glad to have you on the outside, too. I think that I've been involved. I mean, this is my 14th year doing the show, so I've been doing this for a while, and I noticed a very definite trend away from the homeowners, I'm going to say about 10 years ago. And I suspect that they're feeling a little threatened by the homeowners. I think once we ended up with the internet and the ability to connect with people, there was no more divide and conquer. They couldn't isolate people anymore. They couldn't say, as they always did, I'm so sorry you feel that way, but you must be the only one because I never hear that from anyone else. And I think once you had the internet and once people were able to communicate and compare notes and tell their stories, and once the media started picking up these stories, they built this wall. It's almost impenetrable. And they no longer want to communicate. I used to have CAI on all the time. They won't come on anymore. That doesn't mean that a lot of attorneys or managers who are members of CAI won't come on. They will, but if I go through or I try to go through national, they're not interested. They have no interest whatsoever in talking to the homeowners, which is ridiculous because then they go and speak for us. We're here to represent the homeowners, you know, when they go lobbying for more laws.
Well, it seems like that on that side of things, at least that organization is really quick to quote back some statistics about how most folks are happy with their association, and they're so quick with those statistics that having any kind of contrary idea out there, it just completely undermines that message. I mean, if you read their website, there's 64 million people living in common interest developments across the country. I mean, that's a huge number of folks that are every day impacted by what essentially is like a small local government that oversees everything that they do inside their, you know, their property lines.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to me that even though we have these pockets of folks like you and other folks that you have on your show that are homeowner advocates, or, you know, I've got one in my own state who's worked tirelessly for the better part of a decade or more because she had a problem with her HOA once and she just parlayed that into something really serious in lobbying efforts and in getting to know her legislators. But you know, there's so few people like that. And the other real problem is the umbrella organization that should be able to bring all those opinions together instead has just shut all those opinions out.
Yeah. Well, initially the reason they did form CAI was to prove to the government that all of these diverse interests could work together under one umbrella. And therefore, government, it behooves you to provide funding, mortgages, so we can sell this stuff. So that's how that initially came about,
And look how that turned out for us in 2007, 2008, 2009.
Yeah.
It worked so well, didn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it really did. It's brilliant. We're talking to Roger Wood. He's got a website at jrogerwoodlaw.com. Please check it out.
There's a shorter way, Shu. It's hoahelpnow.com. I forget that I shortened up to make it a little easier to find. So that's the easier way to find it. hoahelpnow.com.
Very cool. So check it out. It'll take you to the same website.
It will take you to the firm website. That's correct.
Before we started recording, you were talking about you've been watching the interesting dynamics in HOAs and the trends. And now I know that property values kind of plummeted, even in HOAs. And HOAs are growing, not because they benefit the homeowner in any way. That's a lie. The other person, you talked about the industry, but the other group, I think, that gets a huge benefit out of HOAs and in fact mandates them is local municipal governments. It's a way for them to distance themselves from their constituents, put another layer of governance between them, collect tax money and not really provide all of the services those tax dollars were intended to provide in the first place. So now we've privatized that. We've just chucked it over and said, all right, HOA, you deal with it.
And unfortunately, the persons that are impacted most by that are the individual citizens, right? You're in this situation now where you've got another entity you have to deal with, another entity you've got to write a check to every month or quarter or annually, and you've got another bureaucracy that in most situations won't even listen to you. And certainly when you're in that position, the cities stop listening. Routinely, homeowners go to the cities and say, look what's happening over here in my neighborhood. Look what's happening over here. And the cities say, well, that's an HOA issue.
Yeah.
Talk to your neighbors about that. Don't talk to us about that. While the small government folks tend to applaud pushing those issues over to private entities like an association, I think those same small government folks, if you really push them, would say, yeah, I care about my individual liberties as well. Well, then, which is it? Do you want to push people, you know, away from government, make government smaller at the sacrifice of those individual liberties? Or do you somehow come in and figure out how to legislate the private entity so that you make sure that those individual liberties and freedoms are protected? No one's done that here. They've just kind of thrown the dice up in the air and let them fall where they may. And that's damaging to the homeowner in all kinds of ways. And it leaves the homeowner, again, like we talked about earlier, with no voice. They can't call their city councilman and say, do you know what's going on here? Because he or she won't care. And we already have established that, you know, going to a board meeting isn't exactly always the best way to solve a problem. And it just puts homeowners in this really strange position where they feel like they have nothing to rely on. The law's not on their side. Their city's not on their side. Their own neighbors aren't on their side. And hence why we have a problem.
I think we're going to see big, huge fallouts from all of this, I think. I had semi-predicted that the homeowners at one point would say, wait a minute, I don't need two layers of government. If I've got to have democracy up close and personal in my HOA where I can maybe control things a little bit, then why would I pay taxes and why would I need a local municipal government? And when I put that question to a municipal government, they sort of looked at me as if I had never thought of that. Would people support another layer of government? What if you're the loser government? That hadn't happened because I think, again, fear seems to be the driving force behind HOAs. That's the only way we keep them going. It's fear, which is ridiculous. But we're seeing more violence. You've had your, you know, you've had violence in Arizona. We've had it all over the country.
And that part's just sad beyond belief. It's sad that it's sad on two fronts, right? It's sad that homeowners have to worry about violence and safety issues when they go to a board meeting to talk to their neighbors about the pool rules. I mean, this is not a place where violence should be something we have to worry about. By the same token, it's sad that we push people in directions where they don't seem to have any other way out, but they snap and have a violent reaction to something that the HOA did or something that the homeowners or neighbors have done. I say, and what I always say to clients is, look, I get that this is personal because it's about your home. Because the HOAs are always saying, well, this is business. The HOA is a business. And, you know, I used to say that to boards when I was a homeowner association lawyer. Oh, you're running a business. You have duties. You have obligations. And I don't think that's untrue. But I think that message really quickly will force everyone in the situation to think less about how personal this is, because this is where people live. And you can push people in all kinds of directions. You know, people get angry at the sale at the Black Friday at the local big box department store. But, you know, if you really want to get someone angry, you know, push them where they live, push on their kids, or push them where they work. I mean, those are the things that get people really personally frustrated. And that's what I think is sad about both sides of the situation. I don't want to see my homeowner have to worry about going to a meeting and worrying about something violent. I also don't like to see homeowners push so hard in a certain direction that the only thing they think they have to do to escape it is something violent. Well, that's sad to me.
It is sad, and I absolutely agree with you. I think the one thing, people are terrified of a pink door or somebody painting their house purple or someone having a dog that's 3 ounces over some arbitrary weight limit that some idiot came up with. And they're focusing on all of that, but I think the big picture is we're pushing people to the point where the only way they're going to be able to push back is through violence. We're pushing people to the point where they're getting sick. We have Dr. Gary Solomon, who wrote a paper called The HOA Syndrome, and he's been on a number of times where he's talked about the effects of stress on the body. So we're taking this down to a level where we're making people less healthy. He also wrote a paper on elder abuse because HOAs tend to be bullies and they bully vulnerable people. And when you're elderly, you're a prime target. I'm thinking that we're also really buying some big trouble in the future because we're also targeting the kids. It's the war against children. Children aren't allowed to go out and play. Children aren't allowed to be seen. Children aren't allowed to do anything. At a time when we're dealing with obesity, we're dealing with diabetes, we're dealing with all of the problems, the ailments that come from inactivity, we're making kids go in. We just seem to be going out of our way to make life miserable for people. And I don't know where that's
going to... I'm not sure I disagree. And then when you add the extra issue of financial problems that we've gone through as, you know, as a country and as the world has in the last several years, all of those pressures just have built up into pretty monumental ways. And it unfortunately sometimes seems to come out at the most base level, which you and I know is where people live. And it's in, unfortunately, because so many live in associations, it's in association life where it comes out.
It's a pressure cooker, isn't it, Roger? It's a pressure cooker.
It is. It is a pressure cooker. It is.
And we're just heating it up.
Now, there are some homeowners that can understand it for the pressure cooker that it is and try to set themselves outside of it and make rational, thoughtful decisions about the situation. Sometimes, you know, I have clients that I think the most rational, thoughtful decision that they make, if they can, if the numbers allow them to, is to simply say, you know what, I'm done. I can't live in a community like this. Now, not everybody can make that decision because of whatever the situation is with the mortgage and with the financial situation and the location of the home. So not everybody's in that position. And I hate that people get pushed that far. But I think sometimes, you know, to see the pressure cooker for what it is, some clients that I have, some homeowners have this eureka moment of, why am I putting myself through this? I'm going to sell this and downsize and find somewhere without an HOA where I can live a little bit more peacefully. Maybe it's an older neighborhood. Maybe it's on the edge of town. But, you know, there are lots of folks that are ultimately choosing that as a direction. I wish we didn't have to get that far. I wish people would, you know, wouldn't have to be pushed in a way where they have to get out as their only option. But that's a lot of times where people get.
But you know, we're at the point where there's nowhere to go, Roger. A lot of places mandate HOAs, but not only is the new stuff being in an HOA, they're tearing down all of the older housing because they're not smart growth, part of the smart growth. They're not walkable communities. And they want to rezone them. And it makes perfectly good sense for the municipality because now you don't have these little houses that are sitting there that are being serviced by the municipality. They're tearing those down and they're building towers of condominiums, million-dollar condominiums. Just think of the tax dollars that are generated from a whole stack of million-dollar condominiums piled one on top of each other than that one little house that was sitting there.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening here. You know, that's what's happening in Northern Virginia. You can't find a parking lot that doesn't have a tower growing out of it. What I tell people, Roger, is if you happen to live in a non-HOA house or if you happen to be lucky enough to find one, for God's sakes, record a covenant on there saying that it will never be part of a mandatory membership association.
That's actually a creative idea, just to essentially protect yourself from any future attempt at bringing in the association in a mandatory membership situation. Really interesting. I've thought about it that way.
Well, I've been telling people to do that for the last 20 years. And we decided not to let the industry coin the terminology that we use. Instead of mandatory membership associations, we're calling them involuntary membership corporations. It doesn't quite roll off the tongue like the others, but there you go. It's an involuntary membership corporation, right?
I guess that's one way to look at it. I just think the problem is there's not a lot of situations where the individual homeowner at that level of their own property really gets that choice. And that's too bad. I mean, it's also mandated so far up the food chain that the product we end up with at the end of the production and manufacturing and construction is, you know, a three-bedroom, two-bath in such-and-such ranch HOA, and that's what people can afford to buy, and that's where they go.
Yeah.
Not even to speak of the fact that they're stacking, and even though Phoenix has a lot more land than you know, than the area where you are. They're still stacking a lot of things, on top of the other. You know, they're still finding those infill places, tearing down something old to create some really fancy condominium project that hopefully people will buy and or, rent out on their, you know, their winter vacation to the Phoenix area. So there's still a lot of that going on, even though we have more land to build on.
You won't because they're going to declare that, unbuildable for some reason. They're going to cordon you off, squeeze you in. And that's pretty much what they're doing. They're going to squeeze you in and say, all right, the only place you can live is within the boundaries of this, and the only way you're going to fit everyone in is by building all of these towers, because we're running out of land. The truth is we're not running out of land. That's another lie. But anyway, people buy into that stuff. They've got to start looking into it for themselves. Tell me, Roger, you say you get a lot of calls from a lot of people, and you've been doing this for 2 years. What are the biggest problems that you see? What's going on in HOA land?
You know, from my, you know, individual seat talking to homeowners every day, I'd say the number one thing I hear about is just not understanding why boards are either making decisions not to enforce things the same or uniformly. So, you know, an owner gets a letter that says you got to deal with your purple house, but yet there's seven other purple houses in the community. That one I get so many times, and people don't understand why, and quite frankly, I don't either. It doesn't make any sense to me. It makes sense when you peel the layers back and realize that, you know, board member A doesn't like owner number two and is most worried about owner two's violations and ignores everybody else's because there's some vindictive reason why they want to pursue homeowner number two. I get a lot of those calls, and those are frustrating because it, you know, you look out in the community and see that there's seven other RV garages and the place was built with really large backyards to house your RV, yet they're telling you can't build an RV garage. It doesn't make sense to homeowners, and that one I get a lot of calls on. I still get so many calls about people being sued improperly for unpaid assessments. Even if the homeowner calls me and says, you know, I didn't pay for several months, the reality is what they're looking at is not a suit for collecting several months of fees. They're either looking at those several months of fees times two, times four, times ten, mm-hmm. in additional costs and expenses, or they're looking at just some egregious errors that the board or management made in the accounting. Yeah. And so these lawsuits, everybody's quick to file them, or they record the lien, or in some cases, the extreme cases in Arizona, filing a judicial foreclosure. And yet when you peel the layers back, is there an amount of money the homeowner may owe? Sure. And a lot of people will readily admit that, hey, I had to choose between paying my medical bills or paying my HOA dues, and they chose the medical bills. Sometimes I might have, if they'd have called me first, I might have told them, well, you know what, pay your HOA dues. You don't want to get into that trouble. Your medical yeah. provider will probably wait a little longer. You know, the reality is I get a lot of those calls, and it's so much money being put on the backs of a homeowner for missing three payments or for missing four payments or in some cases for missing no payments. That's even more frustrating. But I get a lot of calls, and that's still a hot issue. I think the reason that it's really interesting to me is even when a homeowner might have a good defense, even when they've got good arguments about misapplied payments or they missed this payment or they double charge me this fee, the HOAs are so used to winning those fights that there's no discussion of a settlement or a compromise with a board. That's frustrated me in the last several months, is really thoughtful homeowners in the current situation, whether they've lost a job, whether they've lost a spouse, whether they've been through whatever else they've been through medically, trying to make sense of the financial issue on the backside, and everybody else is willing to talk to them and negotiate something. Every other creditor they talk to, yeah, we'd rather have some money than all of the money. And when you get to the HOA and the HOA's lawyer, everybody digs their heels in, and there's not one movement at all of compromise. Even if you show them, you know what, here's a ledger that shows you missed applying six of these payments. And the answer is, well, you still would have owed three, and we still would have had to sue you anyway. I mean, there's just no talking to some of the lawyers and the boards in these situations. And that I don't understand. And what I think is interesting is, give it a little time when one of those board members isn't in power or has moved to a different place and isn't in the board seat. And heaven forbid they have one of those horrible situations befall them, job loss, family changes, illness. And they're asking their board to compromise. I just think ultimately there's going to be some people hopefully will open their eyes to this situation. I just can't believe that it happens so regularly, that thoughtful homeowners that really want to resolve the problem, especially on the assessment issue, come face to face with a lawyer, a board, and a management company that have no interest whatsoever in resolving the problem. I actually had a homeowners association send back a $4,000 check because it was short $130.
I was going to ask you about that. I hear about that all the time. People actually send in money and the HOA refuses to accept it. They add late fees, they add interest, they add legal fees, they add all kinds of things. And that money just keeps growing and growing and growing. It morally, I think it's reprehensible. Legally, is there any legal thing that says they have to accept it or they can turn it down and go after? I mean, it makes no sense, Roger. You give me a payment and I say I won't take it. Now I'm going to sue you for my money. It makes no sense at all. Does it?
No, it doesn't. There are some legal protections. Depending on what state you're in, various legislative bodies have made some pretty significant barriers to the associations being that onerous with their fees or being that onerous with not accepting payments. The problem is I never think that the legislation goes far enough. For example, Arizona has a statute that says a homeowner is allowed to direct the payment as they see fit. So if you've got a big balance on your account, but you want to make sure that your current assessment is paid so that you don't get a late fee for December, you can say, please apply this to the December 2013 assessment. Pretty simple. I read into that statute that means you got to take payments. If a homeowner directs you to accept a payment, you have to take them. The HOA lawyers and the management companies don't read it that way. They say, well, it doesn't necessarily require us to take a payment. It just says if we do, we have to follow your client's instructions. And I think that's ridiculous. I think that needs to, some loophole like that that's a little bit ambiguous in the language, there needs to be some protections for homeowners in those situations where HOAs have to accept payments. I think sometimes it's the lawyers and the management companies that don't even tell the board of directors, oh, by the way, the Joneses, they really wanted to write a check, but we told them no. I think most boards would jump all over their lawyer and their managing agent and say, are you kidding me? You told them we didn't want money? Because boards are constantly worried about budgets and constantly worried about delinquencies. And the idea that someone turned down money would seem ridiculous, I think, to some boards. Sometimes I just don't think it gets to them, and that message doesn't get to them. So I don't know about other states. I mean, I do know some other states have some different protections as far as payments go. I think there just needs to be something aggressive at the legislative level to make sure that associations can't say no to money. I get, homeowners get cute sometimes and try to write payment in full and do restrictive endorsements. But, most of the time when clients call me and say, I tried to make a payment, they weren't trying to be cute. They were just trying to give the association money. They were just trying to write a check to try to cure some of the arrearage.
Yeah.
And they're told no.
Yeah.
Unless it's payment in full.
Yeah.
We'll take your money, but we want to charge you an extra $300 for a payment plan to do it. No, just take my money. Just, I want to make sure that, my association is getting the money that it should have gotten several months ago. Those are two issues I hear a lot of, the unequal enforcement and then the money issues. The money issues are numerous. And the last thing I think I hear a lot of, I hear a lot of boards doing their best to rewrite CC&Rs without going through an amendment process.
Yeah.
They use rules. They use board resolutions. They want to make sure you follow the CCNRs, but when they don't like a section or they don't think it's being read properly or it's just not aggressive enough, they'll add whatever they want to add without going through the amendment process. And that happens regularly.
You know, we're running out of time. I did want to talk about fines, and I don't think we're going to have enough time to do fines justice. So I would like to invite you to come back again sometime, Roger, and help us educate homeowners and help us talk, let's talk about fines and let's talk about some of the other issues. But what we do have time for right now is the hierarchy of payments. That's been a big subject in many, many states where you miss a payment or, you might have a $10 fine on your account that you don't even know about. Nobody told you. And so you send in your check and it's on time and the association takes $10 and pays off the fine. And so now you're $10 short on your assessment and you don't know it. So they add interest and they add penalties and they add all kinds of things. And so this $10 mushrooms and it keeps growing and growing. And a year or two down the road, you end up with this nasty gram from a law firm saying, if you don't pay up this amount of money right now, we're going to take away your firstborn. And the homeowner has no idea that there's something going on there. Is there a law in Arizona to prevent it from happening?
Well, I do see this all the time, and I do see that failure of notice the notice doesn't go out. The homeowner keeps moving forward just as everything is normal, and they don't, on certain situations, you have quarterly assessments maybe, or they don't send out statements every month. And so you just keep paying like you're supposed to, not knowing that this is snowballing in the background. I see that happen all the time. That statute I mentioned a few minutes ago about applying payments properly, there is a hierarchy of payment application in that same statute that says it has to be applied in the following manner. The problem is if the next assessment isn't actually due when you make your payment, they will suck your payment into the outstanding fine or penalty or attorney fee or administrative fee. And that's where I think it just, I get a lot of calls about that, and I think that needs to be cleared up. I think in certain situations, homeowners have good arguments. If it gets as far as being sued or a letter being sent out, I think a response letter and or, pushing back a little to say, look, here's why you can't get all of these fees and expenses based upon a $10 problem. Unfortunately, we had too many stories and too many cases that go the opposite direction. $66 in unpaid dues becomes $8,000 in all the other expenses.
Right.
You and I both heard those stories.
Yeah.
I think it takes some homeowners being a bit brave and pushing back. The sad part is I think the answer is a lot more practical. The answer is the companies that make the software that management uses to do all of its accounting, and there are several of those companies that make a total package software for HOA management. I don't think it's that difficult to have multiple ledgers for a homeowner, right? Here's your fine ledger, here's your assessment ledger, and apply payments as they come in the proper way to the different ledgers. I mean, sure, it sounds like more work, but really it's a couple computer keystrokes. And a homeowner would have a much better chance of saying, oh, okay, I see there's a $10 fine on there because it's on the fine ledger. I didn't even know about it. Let's deal with that. But at the same time, doesn't ever get behind in their assessment payments.
Yeah.
Because they're properly credited when they come over. I just think that's, one thing I do when I get an account just in my mind and on paper sometimes, I just look at the total amount of assessments and the total amount of payments over time. And you just subtract those two numbers, and you realize really quickly how much other junk is on that ledger. And the numbers kind of tell the story, right? When you do the fine or you do the assessments versus payments, and that number is $800, and then you look to the other charges on the ledger and realize those total $6,300. Something's wrong there. Something's not quite right. And those are the cases where, when I jump into them, I try to exploit that. I try to bring out the fact to the judge that, wait a minute, this isn't fair. You don't get to charge thousands of dollars in legal fees to collect $50. You just don't. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of homeowners just either roll over and play dead and hope it goes away,
or they write
a check they never have to write.
Roger, we ought to clone you. Would you please come back again?
Oh, absolutely. It was my pleasure. Yeah, I'd come back anytime, Shu, anytime you want me to. These are, as you can see, I'm kind of passionate about this stuff. I take these, I'm a lawyer and I represent a client's interest, but I ultimately have found myself really caring about this whole situation and feel for my clients in all kinds of ways that I never imagined that I could or would. So,
thank you so much, Roger. Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect. All my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs. Life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos. Someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings closed to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid. All your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone. United, we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine. And enjoy those precious golden years. Stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.